702. The World View
with Adam Gilchrist.
22 after 8. Life continuing elsewhere in the world. No shutdowns there. Adam Gilchrist, good morning to you. The International Criminal Court has really set the cat amongst the pigeons. We're expecting Vladimir Putin to our shores in August, I think it is. So that's going to be a tricky one for us to navigate. But this weekend, he was in Ukraine.
Yeah, you do wonder if he pitches up for the BRICS meeting. What does that mean? Does that mean arrest at the airport? Or would anyone dare? Or in transit somewhere? It could happen because the International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant, and I believe that South Africa is amongst the many countries who have signed up to it. Of course, the idea that an arrest warrant's been issued and he should stand trial, specifically the enforced deportation of children from Ukraine to Russia, he's surely never going to face the music for that, is he? Mind you, people might have said that about the Nazis, and yet there are plenty of them who did stand trial. He, of course, chose the opportunity over the weekend to go for positive PR. So a little trip to Crimea, a little trip to Mariupol, this retaken Ukrainian city that's now in Russian hands. Although you notice from the pictures that were released by the Russian news agency that Vladimir Putin only seems to go to the bits that were not completely leveled, which is only a tiny bit of Mariupol. Most of it is in ruins. So did he not see the bombing, or did he, was it just skillfully whisked away? I don't know how that works. Volodymyr Zelensky called the arrest warrant an historic decision that will lead to historic responsibility. I guess we will see. But how's this for a take? He is obviously safe as long as he stays in Russia and until the opponents get hold of him. But there is one other country in the world where Vladimir Putin would be safe, and that is the United States, because they also don't recognize the International Criminal Court. So if he pitched up at the UN in New York, it seems like he'd be all right, which is weird.
I suspect he'll be all right when he comes here, because, of course, we are wink, wink neutral, even though we're quite very clearly on the side of Moscow, at least officially, as far as our government is concerned. Let's move on to another story, Adam. Tell me about the extradition case of Rory McGrath.
There's a film in this, and frankly, a rather depressing one as well, but with a slightly happy ending. A guy called Rory McGrath involved in a pub brawl in Leeds in Yorkshire in northern England in 1980. And during that pub brawl, it was sort of rival blokes having a go at each other. But during it, a police officer got beaten up. Not by him, he says. Sensing, though, an anti-Irish feeling in Britain at the time, it was, after all, height of the IRA, he was charged with assault, and he decided rather than hang around and see what happened, he would flee to Ireland. Life moved on. Rory found his way to New York. He met a woman. He got married. They had children. The years zipped by. He visited the UK for weddings and so forth. And as the decades went by, he never considered himself a fugitive at all. Just thought that was a chapter in my youth. I'm glad it's done with. And anyway, I never actually really caused anyone any harm. Suddenly, 41 years after the original incident, U.S. Marshals came calling at his home in New York State, and he was ultimately, after a lot of paperwork, extradited to the U.K. to stand trial. 43 years after the original incident, he has now been found not guilty. He says the whole thing's had a devastating impact on his wife and sons. The long arm of the law has reached out. There's no statute of limitations, but you do wonder about the lengthy and expensive pursuit of an innocent man. How does that happen?
Gosh, all for it to come out with a no guilty, not guilty verdict. That must be absolutely, absolutely devastating for that family. All right, Adam, tell me about the smelly side effect of a heat wave down under.
Yeah, now we know that fish need oxygen to breathe, albeit oxygen in the water. And so there have been right problems in Australia because, number one, they've had continual heat in some parts of 40 plus degrees. Lower river levels because of drought. Lower river levels because more water's been taken out of the rivers for agriculture. And that has starved fish of oxygen. So in one particular instance, the Darling Baca River in very rural New South Wales, if you put a pin in the middle of Australia, you wouldn't be far off the Darling Baca River. It has become awash with dead fish. Aerial photos show a silver layer on the river. And at first glance, you go, oh, that's rather pretty. And then you say, oh, hang on, millions of dead fish, or as one resident put it, 30 kilometers of dead fish. Graham McGrab summed it up. I believe the cleanup has just started, as in the last few hours. Graham McGrab puts it in his online video. You can imagine leaving a fish in your kitchen to rot with all the doors shut and no air conditioner. Now multiply that by several million. I know. It's just after breakfast.
Yes,
sorry.
Not the most pleasant of thoughts to have. Adam Gilchrist, we'll leave it there on that fishy note for this morning's Worldview.